Rock and roll, yes.
All right. Good morning, all. Good morning, all. It is Saturday, June 13th. Thank God it's not Friday the 13th. It's Saturday the 13th, 2020. This is a regular meeting of the State Fish and Wildlife Commission. Welcome everyone on board. And the first item on our agenda today is open public comment. Nikki, would you like to read the heading there for us?
Absolutely. We will now take public comment from attendees. As a reminder, everyone is currently muted, so if you have a question, please raise your hand. If you're on the computer, the raise hand button appears under your name. If you are on the phone, please press *9 and wait to hear you have been unmuted. That's the indication it is your turn to speak.
So thank you, Nikki. We will now take questions and comments from participants. So we'll get started. Nikki, who's handling the call-ins? Melissa?
No, it's me.
Nikki? Okay, take us away. How many do we have, Nikki?
So far, we have 5. We're going to start okay. with number ending 5940, and then Amarok Weiss is following up. Go ahead. 5940, please state your name for the record.
Good morning. My name is Brian McLaughlin. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can, Brian.
Good morning, Commissioner Chair Carpenter and members of the commission. As I said, my name is Brian McLaughlin. I reside in Portland, Oregon, and I appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony here today. I was a resident of the state of Washington for 40 years. I remember voting for referendum 45, and I served on the agency Steelhead Citizens Advisory Group back in the 1990s. My name was mentioned a few times yesterday during the discussion of the Columbia River Salmon Fishery Management Policy, but my comments today are not specifically about the draft policy, but are on a slightly different subject, the integrity and credibility of the commission and agency. Yesterday, the commission briefly discussed how to address inaccurate information when it was presented to the commission by members of the public. That's a challenging subject, and I respect the different perspectives expressed by commissioners. Your discussion reminded me, however, of something I had let go, but now I wish to address. It seems hypocritical to me for the commission to seek to correct the misinformation presented by the public to the commission before it is willing to publicly acknowledge and correct misinformation presented to the public by your very own director. I'm speaking specifically about the materially inaccurate and misleading statements contained in Director Suswan's March 8, 2019 statement about this commission's last decision regarding Columbia River salmon management. The statement is inaccurate, where it says that the commission extended the use of gill nets, quote, until feasibility testing and implementation of alternative gear has been completed. As you all know, the commission put no such limitation or condition on the future use of gill nets, and that's something that Commissioner McIsaac noted in subsequent DRC meetings. More troubling, the statement sought to justify the commission's action on conservation grounds by stating that the action would, quote, play an important role in removing excess hatchery fish from wild spawning areas, and it specifically mentioned Lower River Fall Chinook. And is misleading because your own staff in the written presentation to this commission noted that there would be no conservation benefit from taking that policy action. And because gill nets are not used in a marked selected manner and are not used to reduce the PHOS on Lower Columbia Fall Chinook. Immediately after that statement was issued by the director, I communicated with you, Commission Chair Carpenter. I communicated with Commissioner Graybill, Commissioner McIsaac, Bill Twight, Ron Warren, and my concerns were forwarded to Nate Pamplin and to the director himself. Not one of those people that I just mentioned ever suggested to me that the statements I mentioned above were accurate. And in fact, at the PRC meeting immediately after the statement was issued, I spoke personally with Commissioner McIsaac, who acknowledged to me that the director's statement contained inaccurate statements and that it made it difficult for Commissioner McIsaac in that respect to communicate about it. The director's statement remained uncorrected on the front page of WDFW's website for weeks, and then it was moved to the director's webpage, where it remains to this very morning, still inaccurate and still misleading and still a stain on the credibility and integrity of the director, the agency, and this commission. So before this commission addresses how to correct misinformation presented by members of the public to the commission, it should address and correct the misinformation presented by the director to the public. After all, public officials and agencies have a higher duty of truthfulness and accuracy. Thank you for listening to my comments.
Thank you for your comments, Brian. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none. We'll move on next. Nikki?
We've got Amarok Weiss, followed by Robert Sudar. Go ahead, Amarok.
Chair Carpenter, members of the commission, first of all, can you hear me?
Yes.
We can, thank you.
Thank you. My name is Amarok Weiss. I'm the Senior West Coast Wolf Advocate with the Center for Biological Diversity. I'm going to cover two topics. First, there is the MOU the department is trying to expedite for the Stevens County Sheriff's Assistant, Jeff Flood, to trap wolves for the department. Everyone is aware of the inherent dangers to wildlife of live trapping. Even with trappers who are highly experienced in live trapping, animals can die from hyper or hypothermia. They can strangle, break limbs, or drown if the traps are set in the wrong locations. And they can die simply from the stress of being captured. This is a condition called capture myopathy. More than a year ago, the sheriff pressured the department to allow his assistant, Jeff Flood, to trap wolves for the department. Public records, consisting of notes from a January 2019 internal department staff meeting, show that staff were adamantly opposed, stating, "This is not allowed for any other wildlife," and that if they give up and allow this, they, quote, "fail as an agency," unquote. Nevertheless, 17 months later, the department now wants to sign an MOU with the sheriff as quickly as possible to allow his assistant to trap wolves. Why? It can't be for the benefit of the wolves. It can only be from improper political pressure. And even worse, the department's intended MOU would allow for Jeff Flood to trap wolves so the department can then kill them. Can you imagine the public horror and outrage when they learn of this and the damage it will do to the public trust in the agency? It's absurd. It shouldn't even be considered. Second, I'd like to respond to comments made yesterday by Director Sue Swin and Commissioner Thorburn. We see repeated kill orders that eliminate wolves from the Kettle Range in the Colville National Forest and reward a bad actor, the Diamond M Ranch, by killing wolves on its behalf despite its repeated failure to use recommended non-lethal measures. We've supplied documented evidence, pattern, and this pattern is the basis for an ongoing court case brought by private plaintiffs against the department. The final hearing in that case is set for June 22nd, but the court found these facts troubling enough to grant a preliminary injunction against the department. And additionally, at this moment, the department is poised to issue a kill order against the Togo Pack for recent conflicts when the department can't even verify that the Togo Pack wolves were the ones that were responsible. Director Sesswin expressed frustration that some commenters suggested that whenever a kill threshold is met, the agency rushes to kill wolves. That was not our perspective. Our perspective is that the department acts irresponsibly and irrationally. The materials we've provided to you are shocking, and they establish that sideboards are needed in this decision-making process. We agree with Commissioner Thorburn's statement that there should be flexibility and that assessments of what measures to take and when to kill wolves must be made on a case-by-case basis, but there can be rules and flexibility, just as is embodied in Oregon's rules. Since 2011, Oregon's Wildlife Agency has killed 14 wolves for livestock conflicts. In that same time period, Washington's agency has killed 31 and has done so when public records show a kill order was not justified. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions from the commission of Amarok? Hearing none, we'll move on. Nikki, who do we have next, please? Mr.
Next
Sudar?
We've got Robert Sudar followed by David Lynn. Go ahead, Robert. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Thank you, Commissioners. Robert Sudar, Columbia River Commercial Advisors. About 2 years ago, I testified on a Friday about a Columbia River issue, and I was so frustrated by the results, I came back on Saturday and talked to you about it. and you asked me to write up a set of suggestions for how I thought the commission could operate more effectively. I got asked to send that again last year, and I did. And one of the primary things was about exactly what Mr. McLaughlin's talking about, responding to inaccurate public testimony. But I think that I take a different take on that than he does. It's impossible for us to try and defend our industry when we hear comments that are not supported by the facts, and there is no way to ever address them. Staff is never directed to take a listing of them and provide responses. So those of you in the commission who don't follow an issue like Columbia River salmon as closely don't know who to believe. I have no doubt about the information I provide to you. I usually send references. But I heard terrible things yesterday that are indefensible, but yet there's no effort to correct them. And I think that is part of the problem. Science, salmon management is science-based. It should not be opinion-based. You have reams of data about salmon management on the Columbia River that should be setting the foundation for all of this. I heard a comment that the policy was about conservation. The policy was never about conservation. It was all about allocation. It was an opinion presented by Governor Kitzhaber, who had the authority to tell his commission to enact it, but he never provided any facts that it was noteworthy. If you look at the final document that came out of that, it was pages and pages long, and a lot of it was about allocation. This is, it's so frustrating to have to try to defend our industry in these circumstances. There's no evidence that a gillnet fishery or a tanglenet fishery is in opposition to conservation and recovery. There's just nothing that you've got that says that. It does show that we can be very selective in every season. Our tangle nets are great in the spring when the mark rate's high. We don't have a bunch of steelhead in the river. In terms of Mr. McLaughlin's comment, in the fall, we are catching lower river hatchery fish in that fishery. The ones above the Lewis River, there aren't a lot, but there are some. And overall, we have a higher percentage of hatchery fish in our catch than the recreational fishery does above Tongue Point. I think that another thing that frustrates me is that nobody tells the troll fishery that they need to do a better job of catching hatchery fish. Nobody tells the recreational charter industry that they need to do a better job. You've given all the allocation, or 80%, 70%, whatever you want to use, to the recreational fishery in the lower river. Nobody says they need to do a better job. But it's somehow the commercial industry is not doing enough. We're the ones. We have the smallest allocation. We're stuck in one part of the river in the fall. And we have a high percentage of hatchery fish in our catch. But yet we're the ones who aren't doing well enough. And I just find that whole thing really frustrating. I would encourage you to find some way to help fact check what's said. I will send a letter. It'll be a long one after yesterday's testimony, but I just don't understand why we have to keep beating these things over and over again when there's plenty of data. Our catch is collected the day after the fishery closes. We have to report our purchases within 24 hours. 60 to 70% of the harvest is sampled by biologists. You know exactly what we caught within a couple of days. It takes months to have any idea what the recreational fishery has caught. It's all guesswork. And even then, you have a low percentage of cards sent back in. This is all upside down. If you want to really manage effectively, it's time to roll this back and start letting the managers, who were not complaining in the first place, do the managing that they've been capable of doing for a lot of years, and get the politics and the opinion out of it. It's a fact-based topic, and you should be using science when it's available, and you got lots about it. That it's a food fish, it's an essential industry. It's frustrating. So thank you for a chance to rant again, but we haven't gone anywhere better than we were 2 years ago in terms of addressing misinformation that's presented to the commission. I understand why people don't want to argue, but at some point there needs to be an opportunity to get to the basic facts. And that's what this policy review and rewrite is really about. Thank you.
Robert, thank you for your comments. Any questions from the commission? Okay, Nikki, will you watch the time as I have my phone on for purposes of communicating? I can't see the time well, so as we go forward, try and keep an eye on time.
Yeah, he was only a smidge over, but I was getting ready.
I'm just acknowledging that I can't do it right now.
No, it's okay. I'm doing it. I'm timing it on
Thank
my
you.
End. So the
By
next.
By the way, Melissa, on the bottom where I see Kelly, Amy, Spadesco, there's a block in there with a P on it, and it says Eva Coleman. I don't know what that is. Can you clear that off?
Eva is tech for when we're going live broadcasting.
For TV.
Okay, that's
a TV person.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, our next person is David Lynn, followed by the phone number 6593. Go ahead, David. Make sure to unmute your line.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is David Lynn from Ocean Shores, representing myself in support of wildlife and wild places. I participated in the most recent Wolf Advisory Group meeting several weeks ago, and during the course of that meeting, I was stunned to hear that the department was seriously considering a formal arrangement with the sheriff of Stevens County to assist in trapping wolves. Ominously, it was also stated that his services would be used during so-called lethal removal actions. Then again, at the Wolf Committee meeting on Wednesday, it was repeated that the sheriff would be involved in lethal removal actions. This is several levels. First, Sheriff Mankey works for the people of Stevens County, while the issues involved are statewide. Stevens County contains less than 1% of the state's population, while the department works for 100% of the people. I do not think it's appropriate for a state agency to delegate its responsibilities to another jurisdiction, as their respective interests will certainly diverge. Once the department starts delegating its wildlife management activities to local jurisdictions, it's on a slippery slope, the end result of which could be local entities exercising control over wildlife that is held in public trust by the state for the benefit of citizens. It would be an abdication of the department's responsibility and would put our wildlife at risk from being managed by people unqualified in the science of wildlife biology and protecting endangered species. Second, Sheriff Mankey has publicly stated that he would not enforce I-1639, an initiative concerning gun safety that passed with nearly 60% of the vote. He has said that it is unconstitutional, and he has sworn to uphold the Constitution. He has also sworn to uphold the laws of the state, of which this is one. No court has yet ruled that 1639 is unconstitutional, therefore there is no basis for the claim that it is. Since Sheriff Mankey is openly defying a state law, I believe he is disqualified from doing work for any state agency or department. Third, I have not seen a copy of the Memorandum of Understanding which the department has negotiated with the Sheriff's Department, so I cannot know what its provisions, conditions, constraints, and other features are in order to comment on its specific details. This must be open for public comment before it is consummated. For all of these reasons, this proposed agreement between the department and the sheriff must be denied by the commissioners. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Mr. Lynn, for your comments. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none. Next person, Nikki. Nikki, did you hear me?
Yeah, sorry, I was muted. Okay. I've got a caller 6593, followed by Ronald Reed, and those are our last two this morning. 6593, you are now unmuted. Can you state your name for the record?
My name's Jim Wells, representing Salmon for All from Astoria, Oregon. Do you hear me this morning?
We hear you, Jim.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was signed up yesterday to testify, and I tried to weigh in, but the system didn't recognize me for some reason. I wanted to comment on policy 3620. Representing Salmon for All, I'm a dual license holder, gillnet fisherman, Oregon and Washington. And the first thing I'd say is Salmon for All agrees with the submitted testimony from Robert Sudar, the Martins, and Greg Johnson. The first thing I'd say is I think one of the major problems here is that a lot of people in the recreational industry will not accept the fact that there's an adaptive management clause built into this policy. And I think Commissioner Kehoe did a good job yesterday explaining that. Just to give you a little idea of what's going on down here, on alternative gears, the fish trap and the purse seine will not be operating this fall. And there's quite a few reasons for that. There's excessive handle of ESA fish. There's high release mortality in the trap and the purse seine. And there's some new numbers that have been TAC approved now for the trap on release. And I'm not sure that the full commission has been briefed on those numbers yet, but they should be. Maybe Ryan could do that. And these gears have shown no economic return. They have not shown that they would be financially viable to the commercial industry. So they will not be used this fall. In select areas, we heard yesterday about how great they are. I'm just amazed by the people that talk about how great they are, but they've never been there, never fished there. They don't even know what's going on. We are now fishing at 25 to 27% of the last five-year average in the spring, and catches are very poor. We've got about 2,000 fish caught in there now after 4 months of continuous fishing. So I don't see how that's so great. And in 2019, last fall was one of the worst in 30 years in our select areas. And your deep river, the only area you have last fall, was very poor, very low catches for both Chinook and silvers. It was about 1,200 silvers caught in there, and so very poor. And as far as the gillnets, they've proven that they can be very selective in time, area, and mesh size. We heard a lot of arguments against that yesterday, but as a lifetime fisherman, they are a very selective tool, the best thing we have right now to harvest our fish. Talking about the spring matrix, in the lower bracket, I would like to see that at 75-25. That's where we're fishing at, where we fished at this spring under temporary rules.
Hey, Jim, you're at time.
Okay, I'll wrap it up. At 20%, a lot of years we couldn't even run our select areas on 20%. So if that bracket could be moved to 75-25, that would help the commercial industry a lot. So thank you very much for the chance.
Thank you for your comments, Jim. Any questions of Jim?
Questions?
Thank you. Commissioner McKaysey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wells, you testified that the trap would not be fishing this fall. Are you referring to the pound net trap in the Kathlamet area or somewhere else? And you mentioned it was due to, but what's the reason again?
Yeah, it would be the pound net, the fish trap at Kathlamet. I understand there was a funding problem. I know that in 19, Stalton Saul Kennedy grant of almost $300,000, and they didn't get it for this year. And there again, there's an excessive handle ESA fish with that trap, and there's high release mortality numbers on it. TAC just came out with numbers probably, I don't know, a month ago on steelhead, Chinook, and coho. And I don't, like I said, I don't know if your full commission's been briefed on those numbers yet or not. And then it's never shown where there can be an economic return to the commercial industry, you know, catching clipped tulies and a handful of silvers that it caught that could be sold. And so it doesn't look like it would be financially viable to get into for the commercial industry.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, Nikki, next, please.
Okay, next we've got Ronald Reed, and we do have a couple more that have come on. I just want to give a reminder, everyone is currently muted, so you need to raise your hand if you would like to give feedback. The raise hand button appears under your name, and if you're on the phone, please press *9. Go ahead, Ronald. Make sure to unmute yourself. Ronald, make sure to push *6 if you're on the phone. Okay, well, there we go. Hello. Hey, Ronald, we got you. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you. Chair Carpenter, members of the commission, my name is Ron Reed. I live in Spokane and I'm a retired business owner operator of 28 years and managed offices throughout the Pacific Northwest. I've been following wolf issues in Washington since wolves first started arriving in our state. The opportunity for wolves to reestablish in Washington is a dream come true for me, but it's become a nightmare for our wolves. Over and over, our wolves, which are just starting to recover, are being killed by the department on behalf of the livestock industry. I want to express my profound anxiety regarding the possibility that the department may be preparing to issue a kill order against the Togo Pack wolves based on an injured calf that was discovered on June 5th. Based on the department's own reports, this injury was not even discovered until a week after it took place. If, as the department claims, there were daily checks happening, human presence and monitoring for sick and injured livestock, the effort was less than effective. The calf's injury was not detected for a week, and if the injured calf was subsequently immediately turned back out to pasture, its injury must have been minimal. Or the department is blowing smoke when it says all these measures were being taken. It's also extremely troubling that the department is even attributing this predation to the Togo Pack. The Capital Press has written about this recent predation and says the department has been unable to radio collar a Togo Pack member. If no one witnessed the attack and there are no radio collars on any Togo wolves, there cannot be enough evidence to show a Togo wolf was involved. I follow the department's updates in the pack territory maps they post, and the fact is there are other wolf packs whose territories overlap into this region, including the brand new Kettle Pack. This is the epitome of reasonable doubt, and as a state endangered species, the Togo wolves should be given the benefit of the doubt, especially when the state wolf plan says the department may need to kill problem wolves, but there is not enough evidence to say the Togo wolves are the problem. As a taxpayer in Washington State, I have grown weary of the department's political gaming that grovels to the livestock industry. The people who pay the taxes that pay your salaries expect the department to protect the common interest in safeguarding endangered species and to serve its charter, which says it must preserve, protect, and perpetuate fish, wildlife, and ecosystems. Instead, the department seems focused on serving special commercial interests. I urge the department and the commissioners to recognize the irresponsibility of issuing a kill order under these circumstances. Thank you very much for the opportunity to provide this testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Reed, for your comments. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none, Nikki, the next person, please.
Next, we've got Martha Hall, followed by Lucy Flanagan, and I don't have any other hands after that. Spoke too soon. There's Tim Reagan as well. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, good morning. This is Martha Hall. Can you hear me?
Yes, Martha, we can.
Good morning.
Yes, thank you. I'm Martha Hall. I live in Anacortes. And as some of you know, I care a lot about how our wildlife is managed. Like at least 95% of the residents of this state, I am not a hunter or rancher. However, like most Washingtonians, my tax dollars are going to the issue I want to speak to today, and it's the management of wolves. It seems like too often special interest groups are managing our wildlife, and the public is ignored. I'd like to reiterate what's been said previously about the department being delegated the responsibility of managing our wildlife. I find it very upsetting that the department would even consider involving a county official. The commission should appreciate that Stevens County does not represent the views of most Washingtonians, and to have them involved in wolf management at any level for anything, I find unacceptable, and I'm appalled that this is even being discussed. I'd also like to discuss the protocol and rulemaking. When will the commission finally realize that the department's protocols that guide the management of wolves don't work? when will we get a protocol that's based on sound science? A protocol that's gone through a truly public process? A protocol that clearly states expectations and defines terms? A protocol that will recognize that a certain number of losses to wild predators should be considered acceptable losses? Just about every other business in this state accepts the fact that some losses will occur, and these are dealt with usually through insurance programs, and the businesses themselves would take special precautions to limit these losses. Our state and our country both have generous insurance programs for ranchers. And many of the non-lethal deterrents are being paid for by taxpayers. Yet some ranchers still cannot accept losses to wolves. It's only early June, and we're already mired in disagreements over the current protocol. The governor and many citizens have asked for a change in how the protocols are written and processed, and we still are using the same kind of protocol that we've been using since the beginning. Like, what is expected when the public is told that the livestock where the injuries occurred were monitored daily and injured animals were removed? What does that mean? Monitored daily.
Martha, you are at time. Please wrap up.
Okay, thank you.
Martha, thank you for your comments. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none. Nikki, next person, please. What do we have? Two more left?
Yeah, and I think Lucy Flanagan, I don't know if she's having problems raising her hand, but I'm going to allow her to talk to see if that's the case. Lucy, are you wanting to give testimony?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, Chairman Carpenter and commissioners, thank you so much for your attention. My name's Lucy Flanagan. I'm a longtime Seattleite and animal behaviorist. I speak as a representative of the public. I'm not in favor of fishing and hunting or commerce on public lands. I speak on behalf of the gray wolf in Washington. Fish and Wildlife has a mission to protect the state's wild animals. At the same time, it has a mission to foster human recreation and commerce on public lands. This creates a tension, I'm sure you know, maybe a conflict of interest. Fish and Wildlife walks on a knife edge under pressure from the powerful meat industry. But hunting the gray wolf, an endangered species in its core habitat, should not be confused with sport. Your director feels, based on growing wolf population in Washington, that your wolf recovery project is doing great. We don't have to worry about the gray wolf in Washington state. The gene pool is robust and here to stay. He looks forward to transitioning out of the recovery phase and into the management phase of the wolf plan. But I don't need to remind you that all the environment of the entire planet is in crisis. All species being interdependent are at risk of extinction on a mass scale as one species after another implodes like a house of cards. We now have to shift our emphasis on protecting the wildlife over protecting human recreation and commerce at this precious moment in time while we still have the opportunity. Meat production may be a moribund industry. It certainly isn't good for the environment. The government has handed the meat producers a cushy deal. They get to graze on public lands for very little money. And when they lose their cattle to the gray wolf, they can go to the Fish and Wildlife and expect protection and compensation. If they followed the non-lethal guidelines, they wouldn't have the conflicts. I'm asking Fish and Wildlife to hear all the stakeholders, but keep your mission in mind and be a strong wall against the ranchers and further human encroachments on the gray wolf. The ranchers can move. The gray wolf has a much harder time of it.
Thank you for your comments, Lucy. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none. Next person, Nikki.
We've got Tim Reagan and then Rachel Bjork. Go ahead, Tim.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is Tim Reagan. I am a marine mammal biologist by training. I spent the first half of my career working on depleted, threatened, and endangered marine mammals. I spent the second half as the scientific program director and then the executive director for the U.S. Marine Mammal Commission. I asked to speak this morning to talk to you about southern resident killer whales. As I'm sure you know, they numbered about 98 in 1995, and they are presently down to 72. But 72 really does not adequately reflect their status. There are only 22 females that are capable of producing a calf. The population will almost certainly decline in the foreseeable future. It cannot have more than 20 adult females in the next 12 years because of the age composition. The three main causes of the decline, as I'm sure you know, are lack of prey, vessel noise and disturbance, and contaminants. But the population is also vulnerable to disease, to an oil spill, social disruption, small population effects, inbreeding, and the consequences of climate change. I wanted to speak especially because I'm seeing the same thing here that I've seen with so many other at-risk populations, where people tend to assume that if we can find the single solution to this problem, everything will turn out, the population will recover, and that usually is really inadequate recovery strategy. In this case, we're going to have to do everything that we possibly can in order to turn this population around. That means not only increasing the amount of prey, but it also means preventing unnecessary vessel noise and disturbance for these animals. I think if we don't take a hard stand to begin with, the population or the challenge will become more difficult. It'll become more expensive for sure. And it'll be more likely to fail. So delaying any recovery efforts that we could possibly implement, I think, is not a reasonable recovery strategy. I also think this is a perfect opportunity to illustrate the value of a precautionary approach. Really, you have the opportunity to set an example, not just for the Pacific Northwest, but for all of the United States and, in fact, the world, where everyone is looking for a good example of good, strong ecosystem-based management. So I urge you to take a strong stand for its conservation. Otherwise, I fear that we might reap the benefits of this population in the short term, but that will come at a cost to future generations. So I thank you for taking my comments, and I will look forward to your participation in this matter in the future. Thanks again.
Tim, thank you for your comments. Any questions from the commission? Hearing none. Nikki, next person.
Next up, we've got Rachel Bjork, and I don't have anybody with their hand up after that.
Okay, this will conclude public comment.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Hi, thank you for this opportunity to give some public comment. My name is Rachel Bjork, and I'm a private citizen. I just wanted to express that I agree with the last three speakers, Martha, Lucy, and Tim. And just wanted to join in the call that it seems anytime we try to overly manage predators in particular, we end up screwing up things. So I would like to encourage the commission to stop trying to overly manage these animals that are native and seem to do pretty well on their own if we stop messing around with them. Ranching is not a no-risk activity, yet the ranchers seem to expect that anytime they lose an animal to a predator, that Fish and Wildlife will come and swoop in and compensate them for what is, again, a risk that comes with them having their cows on land that is ultimately wolf land, coyote land, cougar land, and I think, you know, they're just going to have to learn to accept that there is risk involved with their business. Thank you.